Avoid local people, she said simply. They've never understood us, and they never will.
That's their problem, Vincent commented when he overheard. Perhaps he was right, but from then on, the sisters rarely ventured beyond the garden. They wanted to make sure there were no more tragedies, but it was too late. People ignored Franny with her glum expression and blood-red hair, but Jet had become a legend. The beautiful girl worth dying for. Boys came looking for her. When they saw her on the far side of the old picket fence, with her long black hair and heart-shaped mouth, they were even more ardent, despite the fate of their predecessors, or perhaps because of it. Vincent came out and threw tomatoes at them and sent them running with a snap of his fingers, but it didn't matter. On one day alone, two unhinged fellows went ahead and did crazy, senseless things for the love of a girl they'd never even spoken to. One stood in front of a train barreling toward Boston to prove his mettle. Another tied iron bars to his legs and jumped into Leech Lake. Both sealed their fates. The sisters went directly to the attic in a state of shock once they'd heard the news. They would not eat dinner or speak to their aunt. When night fell, they stole out of the attic window and climbed onto the roof. There were thousands of stars in the night sky. So this was the Owens curse. Perhaps because no one had yet figured out how to break it, it was stronger than ever. The whole world was out there, but for other people, not for them.
"We have to be careful," Franny told her sister.
Jet nodded, stunned by the events of the summer. Then and there they made a vow never to be in love. Franny told Jet not to go to the funerals of the boys whose names she didn't even know. She wasn't responsible for other people's illogical actions, but Jet sneaked out the window and went anyway. She stood in the tall grass, her hair tied up, her eyes rimmed with tears. She wore the black dress, though the weather was brutally hot. Her face was pale as snow. The same reverend had presided over the gravesite services for all four funerals. Now Jet could hear his voice when the wind carried as he recited a quote from Cotton Mather. "Families are the nurseries of all societies, and the first combinations of mankind." A boy in a black coat had come through the woods. He had a somber expression and kept his hands in his pockets. Like Jet, he was overdressed for the hot summer weather. "Wilderness is a temporary condition through which we are passing to the promised land." At first, Jet thought she should run. The stranger might be another suitor, ready to do something crazy to win her love. But the tall, handsome boy was staring at the gathering, his eyes focused on the speaker. He paid her no mind. "That's my father," he said. "Reverend Willard."
"They killed themselves over me," Jet blurted. "They thought they were in love with me."
The boy gazed at her, a serious expression in his gray-green eyes. "You had nothing to do with it. That's not what love is."
"No," Jet said thoughtfully. "It shouldn't be."
"It isn't," the boy assured her.
"No,"
Jet said, feeling something strange come over her. She felt comforted by his calm, serious manner.
"You're right.
Unable are the loved to die, for love is immortality," the boy said. When he saw the way Jet was looking at him, he laughed. "I didn't come up with that. Emily Dickinson did."
"I love that," Jet said. "I love Emily Dickinson."
"My father doesn't. He thinks she was depraved."
"That's just wrong."
This summer, Jet had become a huge admirer of the poet.
"She was a truly great writer."
"I don't understand many of the things my father believes. He makes no sense. For instance, he'd have my hide if he caught me talking to you."
"Me?"
"You're in Owens, aren't you?" "That most certainly would not fly with him. He wishes the Owens family had disappeared long ago."
Again, depraved. Perhaps it was this thought that made the two edge farther into the woods for some privacy. All of a sudden, their discussion felt secret and important. The light fell through the leaves in green bands. They could hear the mourners singing, "Will the Circle Be Unbroken?" "We're related to Hawthorne," the boy went on. "But I've never been allowed to read his books. I'm grounded for life if I do, or at least while I'm in this town, which, believe me, will not be long. My father has all sorts of rules."
"So does my mother," Jet confided. "She says it's for our protection."
The boy smiled. "I've heard that one." He was called Levi Willard, and he had big plans. He would attend divinity school, hopefully at Yale, then head to the West Coast, far from this town and his family and all their small-minded notions. By the time he'd walked Jet to Magnolia Street in the fading dusk, she knew more about him than she did most people. It was nearing the end of the summer, and the crickets were calling. She suddenly realized she didn't want the summer to end. "This is where you live?" Levi said when they reached the house. "I've never been down this street before." "Funny, I thought I knew every street in town."
"We don't really live here. We're visiting for the summer. We have to go back to New York."
"New York?" he said. "I've always wanted to go."
"Then you should come. We can meet at the Metropolitan Museum, right on the steps. It's just around the corner from us."
She had already forgotten the pact she had made with her sister. Perhaps the world was open to them after all. Perhaps curses were only for those who believed in them. "To friendship," he said, shaking her hand with a solemn expression.
"To friendship," she agreed.
Although for the longest time they didn't let go of each other, and she knew exactly what he was thinking. This must be fate. For that was what she was thinking as well. The siblings packed up their suitcases. The summer was over. It had vanished, and all at once the light falling through the trees was tinged with gold, and the vines by the back fence were turning scarlet, always the first in town to do so. Vincent, bored and edgy, fed up with small-town life, was eager to throw his belongings into his backpack and sling his guitar over his shoulder. He'd been itching to return to Manhattan and get his life back on track. On the morning of their departure, they had an early breakfast together. Rain was pouring down, rattling the green glass windows. Now that it was time to leave, they felt surprisingly nostalgic, as if their childhoods had ended along with their summer vacation. Aunt Isabel handed them their bus tickets. "You'll have a good trip. Rain before 7, sun by 11." And sure enough, the rain ceased while their aunt was speaking. When Franny finished packing and went downstairs, Isabel was waiting for her with two fresh pots of tea. Franny grinned. She knew this was a test. It was likely Vincent and Jet had already been assessed in the same manner, but Franny had always excelled at such things. She wasn't afraid to make a choice.
"Let's see what you'll have," their aunt said. "Courage or caution?"
"Courage, thank you."
Isabel poured a cup of an earthy, fragrant mixture.
"It contains all the herbs you've tended this summer."
Franny finished one cup and asked for another. As it turned out, she was desperately thirsty. Her aunt poured from the second pot.
"Isn't that caution?"
Franny asked.
"Oh, they're both the same. You were never going to choose caution. But take my advice. Don't try to hide who you are, Franny. Always keep that in mind."
"Or I'll be turned into a rabbit," Franny quipped.
Isabel went to embrace her favorite niece.
"Or you'll be very unhappy."
As they headed toward the bus station, doors and windows along the street snapped shut.
"Good riddance," was whispered. "Go back to where you belong."
Jet straggled behind. She had felt at home in the garden on Magnolia Street, and even more at home whenever she met up with Levi Willard, whose very existence she kept to herself, a secret she hadn't revealed to her brother and sister. They had the site, but they hadn't even bothered to look into what Jet was doing when she went out in the evenings. She said she was going to pick herbs, and they let it go at that. Their dear Jet, why would they even suspect her? Why would they guess she had learned something from Franny and had thrown up a barrier inside her mind? Franny walked on ahead with Vincent, taking his arm, discussing the test with brews of tea. What did you choose? Courage or caution?
Is that even a question? Vincent had his guitar slung over his shoulder.
He'd had more girlfriends than he could count this summer, yet didn't feel the need to say goodbye to a single one. Caution is for other people, Franny, not for us. They sat in the back of the bus. People avoided them, and for good reason. The Owens siblings looked grumpy and sullen in their black clothes, with their overstuffed luggage taking up a good deal of the aisle. As they sped along the Mass Pike, Franny felt homesick for Manhattan. She had tired of the attitude of the neighbors and the unnecessary tragedies they'd witnessed. She'd missed Halen and had all of his letters bundled at the bottom of her suitcase. Not that she was sentimental. It was purely for archival purposes, in case she should want to refer to a comment he'd made. In Massachusetts, everything had a faint green aroma, a combination of cucumber, wisteria, dogwood, and peppermint. But the scent of the city changed every day. You never could predict what it might be. Sometimes it was a perfume of rain falling on cement. Sometimes it was the crispy scent of bacon, or a sweet and sour loneliness, or curry, or coffee. And of course there were days in November that smelled of chestnuts, which meant a cold snap was sure to come. When the bus neared Manhattan, Franny opened the window so she could breathe in the hot, dirty air. She was still having that same dream about a black bird that spoke to her. If she hadn't thought psychotherapy was utterly ridiculous, she might have asked her father what on earth her dream might mean. Was it flight she wanted? Or freedom? Or simply someone who spoke her language and could therefore understand her confusing emotions? Careful, Vincent told her with a grin when he saw her moody expression. I foresee complications of the heart.
Don't be ridiculous, Franny sniffed. I don't even have one.
Oh, goddess of the rational mind, Jet intoned. Are you made of straw? Vincent took up the joke. No, she's made of brambles and sticks. Touch her and be scratched.
I'm the maid of thorns, Franny said gamely,
even though she had already picked up the scent of Manhattan through the open bus window. Tonight, it smelled of love.
Part 2. Alchemy. The most glorious hour in Manhattan was when twilight fell in sheets across the great lawn. Bands of blue turned darker by the moment as the last of the pale light filtered through the boughs of cherry trees and black locusts. In October, the meadows turned gold. The vines were twists of yellow and red. But the park was more and more crime-ridden. The Owens siblings had ridden their bikes on the paths without adult supervision when they were 5 and 6 and 7. Now children were forbidden to go past the gates after nightfall. There were muggings and assaults. Desperate men who had nowhere else to go slept on the green benches and under the yews. Yet to Franny, Central Park continued to be a great and wondrous universe, a science lab that was right down the street from their house. There were secret places near Azalea Pond where so many caterpillars wound cocoons in the spring that entire locust groves came alive in a single night, with clouds of newly hatched morning cloak butterflies. In autumn, huge flocks of migrating birds passed over, alighting in the trees to rest overnight as they traveled to Mexico or South America. Most of all, Franny loved the muddy ramble, the wildest, most remote section of the park. In this overgrown jumble of woods and bogs, there were white-tailed mice and owls.
Birds stirred in the thickets, all of them drawn to her as she walked by. On a single day, waves of 30 different sorts of warblers might drift above the park. Loons, cormorants, herons, blue jays, kestrels, vultures, swans, mallards, ducks, 6 varieties of woodpeckers, nighthawks, chimney swifts, ruby-throated hummingbirds, and hundreds more were either migrating flyovers or year-round residents. Once Franny had come upon a blue heron nearly as tall as she. It walked right over to her, unafraid, while her own heart was pounding. She stayed still, trying her best to barely breathe as it came to rest its head against her cheek. She cried when it had flown away, like a beautiful blue kite. She, who prided herself on her tough exterior, could always be undone by the beauty of flight. Near the ramble was the alchemy tree, an ancient oak hidden in a glen few parkgoers ever glimpsed, a gigantic, twisted specimen whose roots grew up from the ground in knotty bumps. The tree was said to be 500 years old, there long before teams of workers turned what had been an empty marshland into the groomed playground imagined by Frederick Law Olmsted in 1858, giving the city a form of nature more natural than the very thing it imitated. It was here, one chilly night, that the sisters dared to unearth the abilities they had inherited. It was Samhain, the last night in October, All Hallows' Eve, the night when one season ended and another began. Their parents were out at a costume party, having dressed as Sigmund Freud and Marilyn Monroe. It was a night of festivity, and troops of children were scattered along the city streets. 2 out of 3 little girls were witches with tilted black hats and rustling capes. Halloween in New York City always smelled like candy corn and bonfires. Jet and Franny cut across the park to meet Vincent after his guitar lesson. As they were early, there was time to sit on the damp grass. The summer had started them thinking, if they were not like everyone else, who then were they? Lately they'd been itching to know what they were capable of. They had never tried to combine whatever talents they might have. "Just this once," Jet said. "Let's see what happens. We can try something simple. A wish, one each. Let's see if we can make it be." Franny gave her sister a discouraging look. The last time she had said just this once, 2 boys had been struck by lightning. Franny was definitely picking up something. Jet had an ulterior motive. There was something she desperately wanted. If there was ever a time to make a wish, it was now. "We can find out what Mother has been hiding from us," Jet suggested. "See what we're really able to do." If there was a way to get Franny involved, it was suggesting an attempt to prove their mother wrong. They joined hands, and right away the air around them grew heavy and dense. Franny repeated a phrase she had overheard Aunt Isabel recite when one of her clients had asked for a wish to be fulfilled. "We ask for this and nothing more. We ask once and will ask no more." A soft fog rose from the ground, and the birds in the thickets stopped singing. This was it. Something was beginning. They looked at each other and decided they would try. "One wish apiece," Franny whispered, "and nothing major. No world peace or the end of poverty. We wouldn't want to push it over the limit and have some sort of rebound that does the opposite of the wish." Jet nodded. She made her wish right away. Eyes closed, breathing slowed. She was in a trance of desire and magic. Her face was flushed and hot. As for Franny, she wanted what she most often experienced in her dreams, to be among the birds. She preferred them to most human beings, their grace, their distance from the earth, their great beauty. Perhaps that was why they always came to her. In some way, she spoke their language. After a few minutes, when it seemed nothing would happen and the air was still so heavy Franny's eyes had begun to close, Jet tugged on her sister's arm. "Look up." There, on a low branch of the tree, sat a huge crow. Was that your wish? Jet whispered, surprised. More or less, Franny whispered back. Of all the things in the world, a bird?
I suppose so. It is definitely studying you.
Franny stood up, took a deep breath, then lifted her arms in the air. As she did, a cold wind gusted. The crow swooped off its branch and came to her just as the sparrow had in their Aunt Isabel's house, as the heron had walked to her, as birds in the park were drawn to her from their nests in the thickets. This time, however, Franny was caught off guard by the sheer weight of the bird and by the way it looked at her, as if they knew each other. She could swear she could hear a voice echo from within its beating breast.
I will never leave unless you send me away.
She fainted right then and there in the grass.
Vincent had begun to go downtown on a regular basis, most often headed for a bar on Christopher Street that he knew served minors, a rough, ratty tavern called the Jester, frequented by depressed NYU students who drank themselves into oblivion before staggering back to their dormitory rooms. Ever since coming home, he'd been running away from himself, and drink was one way to do that. There were pockets of magic in some of the tavern's booths, where plans had been hatched long ago. It was a good place to have a mug of ale and disappear. Occasionally he saw a glimmer of himself in the mirror above the bar, and then he would slink down in the booth. He wasn't ready to see who he was. In the Magus, there was a forgetting spell, which he cast upon himself. Still, he must have recited it incorrectly, because he felt the spark of his true self when he was walking through the park at night. He heard his own heartbeat then, and felt a quickening in his blood. He wondered what it might be like to open the door to a different life, one in which he did not hide in taverns or walk in the dark. Now, as he crossed the ramble, he was shocked to see Franny lying on the ground, her face a ghostly white. She had been revived, but was still prone, her head spinning.
"I'm fine," she insisted when Vincent raced over. "I'm perfectly okay."
She had been overwhelmed by the intensity of the crow's intentions. In an instant, he made it clear he was hers. She, who had no heart, the Maid of Thorns, was now beloved by a common crow, and if the truth be told, she was thrilled to be in contact with such an amazing creature. Was this what a familiar was? A being that knew you better than any human ever would? There was a cawing from above. Vincent took note of the way the bird appeared to be guarding his sister. "Looks like you've got yourself a pet."
"I would never have a pet," Franny said. "I don't believe in them."
"What were you two doing?" Vincent asked, for he had the sense he'd been left out of something rather important. The air still felt sticky and damp, and it smelled sweet.
"Nothing,"
Franny and Jet said at the same time. "Right." Vincent grinned. Their dual denial was a dead giveaway.
"We wanted to see what we could do if we combined our efforts," Franny said.
"And this was the result?" Vincent said. "A bird? Really, you should have waited for me. I would come up with something far better. $1 million, a private plane."
"We wanted simple," Franny said.
The three began walking up Cedar Hill behind the Metropolitan Museum. Milkweed was growing wild, even though Fifth Avenue was on the other side of the museum. It was possible to see hummingbirds here in the summer if you lay on your back in the grass and remained perfectly still.
"Whatever we did, it didn't quite work out," Franny admitted. "I asked for flight."
"You have to know how to ask for things," Vincent told her. "The Magus says always be specific." When they reached Fifth Avenue, Jet stopped in her tracks. Even though the night was dark, she could see what was before her. Her wish was entirely whole and absolutely perfect. She knew how to ask, and had been very specific.
"Send me my true love."
It was simple, and there was no way for it to be misunderstood. And now there was Levi Willard, sitting on the steps of the museum. He was so handsome, it made no difference that he was wearing a threadbare black suit, a skinny black tie, and a scuffed pair of black shoes.
"Jet," Franny said. "Are you all right?"
Jet had stopped breathing, but only for a moment.
"That's him," she said. "My wish."
Franny spied the boy on the steps. When he stood to wave, she narrowed her eyes.
"Seriously? Him? What about the curse?"
"I don't care."
"Maybe you should,"
Franny said, thinking of all the funerals Jet had attended. Jet took hold of her sister.
"You have to cover for me."
Franny looked at the boy on the steps and pursed her lips.
"This might be too much for you," she told her sister. "Sneaking into the house, dealing with Mother if she does find out. And isn't this what we said we'd stay away from? We made a vow."
"Franny, please. I know I can do it. Isabel tested me with the tea, too," Jet said. "Did you think it was just you?"
Surprised, Franny asked,
"Caution or courage?"
Jet smiled her beautiful smile. "Do you even have to ask? Who wouldn't choose courage?"
"Go," Franny said, "before I change my mind."
Vincent stood with his hands in his pockets, puzzled, as Jet ran down Fifth Avenue. "What did I miss?" he asked.
"Jet's been keeping secrets."
"Has she? Our Jet? Didn't she choose caution?"
"Apparently not," Franny said.
"Is this our Jet who never breaks a rule?" They both thought it over. Jet was something of a mystery. "And who's he?" Vincent asked.
"I believe he's her date."
"Him? He looks like a funeral director."
"It's him, all right," Franny said. "He's the one."
In the morning, they knew they were in trouble. Vincent and Franny were awakened early, summoned to the kitchen where their parents awaited. Their mother and father were at the table, 2 cups of black coffee set out before them, bleary-eyed and grim, having been up all night. It was difficult to take them seriously, for they were still in their costumes, Sigmund and Marilyn. Their mother was smoking a cigarette, even though she had quit several months earlier. "Whatever it was," Vincent was quick to say, "we didn't do it." "Do you or do you not know where your sister is?" their father fumed. Vincent and Franny exchanged a glance. Jet was missing?
"And what is this?" their mother asked.
There was a pool of melting butter in the butter dish, a sign that someone in the house was in love. "Don't look at me," Vincent said.
"It's nonsense anyway," Franny added.
"Is it?"
Susanna said. "We've let you run riot for too long," their father went on. "That trip to Massachusetts never should have happened. What a mistake!" He turned to their mother. "I told you it was a matter of genetics, and once again I was proven correct."
"Shouldn't we call the police?"
Franny was thinking of the boy in the black suit. She didn't even know his name or where on earth he and Jet had disappeared to.
"The police," Susanna said. "The last thing we want is to bring in the authorities. No, your father is the one who deals with abnormalities."
Disgusted by his parents' reaction, Vincent began pulling on his boots in order to go look for his sister.
"Jet is missing, and that's all you have to say? That we're not normal?"
"That's not what I said,"
their mother insisted.
"It's exactly what you said,"
Franny remarked with a dark look. She went to collect her jacket so she might join Vincent in the search. Of course she blamed herself. She should never have agreed to cover for Jet. She'd gone so far as to stuff pillows under her sister's quilt so it would appear she was home sleeping should their mother check in.
"Do not leave this house," Dr. Burke Owens demanded. "We're already down one."
Vincent and Franny ignored his command and went to the door. When it was thrown open, however, there was Jet on the threshold, hair in tangles, clearly out of breath, holding her shoes in her hand.
"You're alive," Vincent said. "That's good."
"You do realize that cover for me does not mean I'll stay out all night," Franny hissed.
Now that Jet was safe and sound, Franny could allow herself to be furious.
"We lost track of time," Jet explained. "We were everywhere, places I've never been to before, even though I've lived here all my life. The Empire State Building, the ferry around Manhattan. Afterward, we walked along the Hudson until we wound up at a diner on 43rd Street. He'd never had a bagel before. He'd never heard of lox. Next time he wants to have Chinese food."
"You didn't notice when the sun came up?" Franny said, no longer as angry.
"I swear I didn't. Everything just happened."
Vincent and Franny exchanged a look. This was the way people spoke when they fell in love.
"We don't even know who he is," Franny said. "He could have been a murderer."
"He is not a murderer. His father is a reverend, and he's applying to Yale. I met him over the summer when we were visiting Aunt Isabel. Yesterday he happened to be at a National Youth Club meeting at Queens College. He said that he suddenly found himself thinking about me right there in Queens, in the middle of everything, and he couldn't stop. So he got on a subway, and then he just appeared."
"He sounds fascinating," Vincent said dryly.
"Well, he is,"
Jet said, her face flushing with emotion.
"He wants to do good in the world and make a difference, and I find that fascinating."
Their mother had come into the hallway, the color drained from her face. She'd overheard just enough to cause her to panic.
"Who were you with?"
"I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to be this late."
"You were with some boy.
What is his name?"
Jet had the sense that she should lie, but it wasn't in her nature. She turned quite pale as she said,
"Levi Willard."
To everyone's great shock, Susanna slapped Jet hard so that her head hit against the wall. Their mother had never before raised a hand to any of them. She didn't even believe in it.
"Mother!"
Franny cried.
"Your father is in the kitchen, and I don't want him to hear a word of this. Don't you ever see that individual again, Jet. Do you understand me?"
Jet nodded. There were bright tears in her eyes.
"I will send you away to boarding school if I ever find out you've disobeyed me. It will happen so fast you won't have time to pack a suitcase."
"What's the big deal?" Vincent said. "She lost track of time."
"Just do as I say. And for now, you're all grounded. And understand this. Just because you can love someone doesn't mean they won't be destroyed."
"But you're married,"
Jet said, confused.
"I gave up love for a normal life," Susanna said. "That's all I ever wanted for you."
"You never loved our father?"
Franny asked.
"Can't you tell?" Vincent threw in.
"Of course I love your father. Don't misunderstand me. I'm just not in love, which has saved us both in ways you can't imagine. I recommend you do the same."
"We are not like other people, that much is true. It has to do with our history, and if you're lucky, you'll never know any more than that."
"I already do,"
Franny dared to say.
"I spent a great deal of time in the library when we were at Aunt Isabel's."
"Some things should be left alone," Susanna told Franny.
"You won't be going back to Isabel's or to that library." She turned to Jet. "And you stay away from that boy. Do you hear me?"
"Yes, I hear you."
Jet's eyes were raised to meet her mother's. She appeared to acquiesce, but her expression was cool.
"Loud and clear," she said.
Their father called to them.
"May I ask what is going on here?"
They exchanged a look, agreeing it was best to keep him in the dark, but they all trooped into the kitchen.
"Well, hallelujah," he said when he saw Jet. "One problem solved and another begun."
He gestured to a crow tapping on the window, clearly wishing to be let in. Franny went to unlatch the lock and push up on the window frame.
There you are.
She was actually delighted to see him.
Oh, for goodness sake, Franny, must you have creatures around?
Their mother said.
Yes, I must.
The crow flapped inside and made himself comfortable on a curtain rod. When they went to their room, the crow flapping after them, Jet was despondent.
She's never loved our father.
She loves him, Franny said as she made a nest out of a sweater atop her bureau.
Just in her way.
Jet got into bed and pulled up the covers.
Oh, no, you don't, Franny said, getting into bed beside her. Tell all.
Mother hates Levi, and she doesn't even know him. I think she hates me, too.
We don't have to listen to her, Franny said. Or be like her. She definitely would have chosen caution.
Jet closed her eyes.
I won't listen to her.
They lay there side by side, defiant, convinced that if there were curses, then there must also be cures for every mortal plight. In November, April Owens came to New York, having told her exasperated parents that she'd been invited to visit her cousins, which was far from true. She had already spent what should have been her first freshman semester of college working in a coffee shop in the North End. She had been accepted to MIT, delighting her stupefied parents, who had no idea she was so intelligent, but had deferred because she felt she had other things to attend to. It was too exciting a time to be tied down to school. On the 8th of the month, Senator Kennedy from Massachusetts had won in the closest presidential election since 1916. Hatless and handsome, he had given people faith in the future when he gave his acceptance speech. I can assure you that every degree of mind and spirit that I possess will be devoted to the long-range interests of the United States and of the cause of freedom around the world. April came directly to the Owens' townhouse. She had a packet of lavender in her pocket, for luck.
Look who's here!
Susanna Owens tried to sound cheerful when she opened the door, but her pose was a flop. In fact, she looked panic-stricken at the mere sight of her niece. She most certainly didn't want the responsibility of overseeing this difficult girl, whose influence might lead her children to the brink. As for April, she was unreadable as she slipped inside the house, a Cheshire cat who had arrived with a single suitcase. She looked younger than she had in the summer, her white blonde hair pulled into one long braid, her face free from makeup. She was dressed in black with knee-high lace-up boots. Surprise, surprise, April said. She turned to Jet, whom she considered a pal. Although I bet you knew I'd be here. The family turned to Jet. What is that supposed to mean? Dr. Burke Owens said, always looking for a neurosis to pin down. Are you and April in cahoots?
It doesn't mean a thing, Jet said, doing her best to skirt the issue.
When she and April exchanged glances, she was glad she'd said nothing and was stunned to read her cousin's thoughts. April did have something of a cluttered mind. Certainly, it couldn't be this.
You can read me like a book, April assured her cousin. You know why I'm here.
Jet?
Susanna said with alarm. Since the incident with that boy, she had taken to checking her daughter's room every night, and she made sure to pick up the extension should Jet receive a phone call, which only caused Jet to be very adept at quickly hanging up. Now Jet gazed at the floor and refused to respond. She never divulged privileged information, hers or anyone else's, though she knew why April had come. If their cousin wished to make a scene, so be it.
It's silence, is it? Susanna said. Well, then April can stay the night, but she'll leave in the morning.
You're kicking me out? Just like that? April shook her head in disbelief.
Your parents will want you to come home, Susanna said. I'll phone them. If anyone understands wanting to escape Boston, it should be you. From what I've heard, we're two peas in a pod. Difficult to control. I heard you were sent to two different boarding schools, and that when you went to Paris, you turned your back on who you were. Susanna's fierce distaste for this annoying girl was evident.
My dear, you are young, she said coolly. Therefore, I'll excuse your rude manner. You may stay through breakfast.
The sisters made up the spare room for their cousin. It was a cramped, chilly space with a single bed. Years ago, another family's cook had resided here and had cried herself to sleep every night. It was still possible to see tear stains on the floor.
Where's Henry? Jet asked.
My parents killed him, of course. They said he got into the rat poison, but I'll never believe that. April lay down on the bed, weary, one arm flung over her eyes. As it turned out, she was not immune from rejection.
Your mother hates me, she said.
Our mother is too well-bred to hate, Franny said. She disapproves. The crow found his way to the room and let out a shrill caw. April opened her eyes. You have a familiar, she said to Franny. And your parents haven't killed him yet?
He's not a familiar, Franny said. He's a foundling.
Fine, April said. Tell yourself that. She gazed down the hallway, then turned to Jet. Where's your brother? Out raising hell?
Guitar lessons, Jet said. He's quite serious about it. I suppose he has time for hell later on.
In an attempt to rally, April sat up and gazed in the mirror. She unbraided her pale hair and dabbed on some lipstick. The sisters exchanged a look, for unless they were mistaken, their cousin's eyes were brimming with tears.
April, I'm sorry, Jet said.
Why on earth should you be sorry? Franny asked her sister. She's the one who arrived here without an invitation. Instead of the smart talk they were used to from April, their cousin cried for a moment, then pulled herself together.
Do you need some water? Franny said, touched by the sight of her adversary in tears.
April shook her head. Did your mother warn you not to fall in love? She asked the sisters. Did she say it would ruin you? Because it's common knowledge that she ran off to Paris with some Frenchman she was mad for, but he had some sort of accident. And that was that. She can be cautious now if that's what she wants. But as far as I can tell, love is like a train that will keep going at full speed whether you like it or not, so you may as well enjoy the ride. If you try to avoid it, you'll just make everything worse. What's meant to happen will. She looked at Jet more closely. Congratulations. I can see it's already happened. I hope he's worthy. Who is he?
Levi Willard, Jet said.
April looked stricken. That's a bad idea. Franny was quick to defend her sister.
I don't see how this is your business.
Well, it is, and it's your business, too. The Willards despise our family. There's some sort of feud. It's been going on for hundreds of years. It has something to do with the curse. The sisters looked at her blankly. Don't you get it? April said. He's part of the secret.
I doubt that, Franny said.
You can doubt all you want, she turned to Jet. Have you met the Reverend?
Not yet, Jet admitted.
You probably never will. He'll refuse to be in the same room. He's not too well-bred to hate us. I wandered into his garden during my first visit to Aunt Isabel's, and he came out and poured salt on the ground, as if I had contaminated the place. Our aunt went over there, and I received a letter of apology in the mail, but his garden died right after that. Maybe it was a lack of rain, or maybe it was our aunt. I don't know. I just know none of this bodes well for a happy future for you and Levi Willard.
Things change, Jet said bravely.
Do they? April had begun to unpack.
Along with her clothes, she'd brought several candles. Aunt Isabel always says that every guest should bring a gift when visiting, even if that guest is unwanted. She handed a red candle to Franny and a white one to Jet. If you wish to see who your true love is, prick 2 silver pins into the wax. When the candle burns down to the 2nd pin, your beloved will arrive. Works every time.
No, thank you. I already know my true love, Jet said stubbornly. I have 0 interest in games like this,
Franny informed their cousin. She believes in logic and empirical evidence, Jet informed April.
So do I, April said. I'm the scientist here. I've been studying arachnids in my spare time, especially those that murder their mates after reproducing. I feel it will give me insight into the odds we Owens women have.
If you plan on calling yourself a scientist, you should be aware that odds don't matter. The natural world defies statistics.
Does it?
April made a face that showed she disagreed.
I think the genetic realities of our family are quite obvious.
It's in our blood. She took out a last candle for Vincent.
He won't be interested, Franny said with assurance.
You never know, April said.
Yes, I do,
Franny insisted. As usual, Vincent came home late. He peered into the sisters' room to find Jet asleep and Franny in bed reading a book concerning the migration of owls. Even from a distance, Vincent stank of cigarettes and whiskey.
Let me guess, Franny said. You were at a bar.
Vincent sat on the edge of the bed. Dad said April is here.
You spoke to Dad?
They both laughed. Conversations with their father were rare.
She's leaving after breakfast, Franny reported, thankfully.
She's not so bad, Vincent said.
Oh, please.
She's actually sort of vulnerable.
Hard to believe.
She seems perfectly capable and extremely full of herself. By the way, she brought you a gift.
Vincent frowned.
Did she?
Franny gestured to a black candle on her desk.
She says it will show you your true love.
Vincent pitched the candle into a trash can. Not interested.
Exactly as I thought,
Franny nodded.
I know you too well.
Mind if I sleep on the floor? Vincent was far from sober, and before Franny could answer, he sprawled out on the white carpet, where he snored gently through the rest of the night. In the morning, when Franny went to the spare room, April was gone. She hadn't bothered to wait for breakfast. She hadn't said goodbye. All that remained of their cousin were a few pale hairs on her pillow and a note. Thanks for nothing. Franny sat on the bed, which was still faintly warm. She felt guilty and ashamed. After all, they shared the same bloodline. Franny asked the dresser drawer to open, which it quickly did. There was the red candle. Franny placed it on the night table. She closed her eyes and willed it away. It fell onto the floor and rolled toward the door. Vincent had come to the threshold of the room. He picked up the candle.
"You've been practicing," he said admiringly.
"I don't have to practice,"
Franny responded.
"None of us do. April was right. It's in our blood."
"Where is April?" Vincent asked, puzzled by the empty room.
"Do you care?"
Franny asked.
"Somewhat," he admitted.
"Well, somewhat isn't enough. We weren't nice to her, so she left."
"I was always nice to her, wasn't I?"
"No," Franny said bluntly. "You were dismissive."
"Is that another word for cruel?" Vincent seemed remorseful.
"Of course not,"
Franny assured her brother. It was difficult to speak to someone who was avoiding the truth.
"You're just interested in other things."
"Am I?" Vincent said. Franny had decided to go forward with the love divining spell to prove that love was out of the question for her.
stick 2 silver pins into a candle. When the candle burns down to the 2nd pin, your beloved will appear. Surely no one would arrive. She went and fetched 2 straight pins from their mother's sewing basket. This is dangerous, Vincent told her. Love is easy to find, but not so easy to get rid of, as he well knew from his summer fling which had soured so quickly. Jet wandered into the room as Franny was lighting the candle. They could still find each other, no matter where they were, just as they had when they were children whose skills made it impossible to play hide-and-seek. If you're so good at reading people, what was up with April? Franny asked her sister. Jet flushed slightly. Don't know.
Look at her, Vincent pointed to Jet. She can't tell a lie for the life of her.
No, Franny said warmly. The Best Liar Award goes to Mr. Vincent Owens, Esquire.
Gratefully acknowledged and accepted.
Vincent bowed deeply. There was a knock at the front door. Without them noticing, the candle had burned down to the 2nd pin.
All I know is that I threw my candle away, Vincent reminded them. It's for one of you.
Franny and Jet stared at each other. It's probably for you, Franny said. I didn't light my candle. I can't have Levi appearing at our door. You go, she told her sister. Franny went, her unwilling heart slamming against her chest. She was convinced that she was the last one love would ever come to. She wasn't made for such things. She wanted flight and freedom and would prefer to live among the birds, pitching a tent in Central Park and having nothing to do with humankind. Surely the caller was the mailman or one of her father's misdirected patients who had come to the wrong door. The crow came to light on the molding of the door.
Make whoever it is go away, Franny told the crow.
The bird was supposed to be her soulmate, wasn't he?
But rather than help, he lifted off and winged to his favorite perch above the drapes, eyeing her with a knowing look. The knock came again. Vincent approached, carrying his guitar case. He'd begun to attend concerts at the Riverside Church on Sunday afternoons, and had been caught up in folk music. He wore cowboy boots now, old dusty ones found at a second-hand store. He'd bought a fringed suede vest at some godforsaken thrift store on the Bowery.
Don't open the door, Franny told him.
I have a lesson, and I'm late. This is something you'll have to handle, kiddo.
Vincent flashed his glorious grin, an expression that always meant trouble, either for him or for someone else. This time, that someone was Franny. Vincent swung the door open before she could stop him. There was Halen, leaning on the wall.
You're home, he said. I was about to give up. No one was answering the phone. You seem to be avoiding me.
Indeed, it was true. She had hardly seen him since their return from the summer. Now she knew why she had been keeping her distance. She took a step away from him. She'd turn pale as paper.
Are you okay?
Hay was carrying an armful of college catalogs. They had already decided to apply to all of the same schools. They had a bet going. The winner would be the one who got into one of their top 5 choices. Harvard, Stanford, Berkeley, Brown, and the hometown favorite, Columbia.
You didn't know it was going to be him? Vincent smirked as he headed out.
He didn't need the clairvoyant tea Aunt Isabel concocted out of mugwort, thyme, yarrow, and rosemary. He didn't need Jet's empathy or Franny's curiosity. This one was obvious.
Your brother's a funny guy, Halen said.
The crow flew across the living room to perch on a velvet armchair. He studied Halen, and Halen studied him back, duly impressed.
You've got a pet?
You know that I don't believe in pets.
Franny collected the crow, then opened the window and set him on the railing.
You're dumping him outside? Halen asked, bemused.
He's a bird, Franny said. It won't hurt him.
Her heart was still pounding.
This had to be wrong. Love?
Hay went to peer through the window.
Does he have a name?
Louis.
Franny named him on the spot. She hadn't thought to call him anything before, other than hers. Halen laughed.
Why is a raven like a writing desk? He said,
quoting Lewis Carroll's unanswerable riddle in Wonderland.
Because a writing desk is a rest for pens, and a raven is a pest for wrens. But he's not a raven. Corvus brachyrhynchus, the common crow.
He doesn't look common. Lewis was tapping on the glass.
Franny couldn't stop staring at Halen. It had been there all along, whether she'd been aware of it or not. If she just held out, it would likely pass. It had to pass. For his sake as much as for hers.
Franny had read in one of Aunt Isabel's books that if you lit a match to a handful of snow and it melted quickly, the snow on the ground would soon disappear. By counting the knots on a lilac bush, the number of cold spells could be predicted. Though the weather was chilly, the sisters escaped the house whenever they could. They liked to walk along the bridle path in the park, wearing high boots and heavy black coats. It was the season of migration, and Franny stared longingly at the huge flocks passing overhead. She wished for freedom, and here she was earthbound, worried about the petty concerns of human beings. On these days, Jet was often on her way to meet Levi, and Franny was her accomplice. Sisters were sisters, after all, and if they didn't stick up for each other, who would? Their mother had continued to make matters difficult ever since Jet had gone missing. She had posted a sign-out sheet on the refrigerator, and every time the girls left the house, they were to jot down their destination, time of arrival, and time of return. Foolishly, their mother trusted Vincent, who disappeared to Greenwich Village whenever he had the chance. "Good luck fighting the power," he'd say to the girls as he took off.
"Mother is not the power,"
Franny would say. "Well, she has power over you," Vincent remarked, which they all knew was true enough. On this particular day, Jet had until 4 o'clock. They said they were heading to the Museum of Modern Art to do research for term papers, but only Franny would be going. She had brought a camera along and planned to take photographs in the sculpture garden that she could have developed in case their mother demanded proof. Levi was waiting at the Bethesda Fountain, beneath the Angel of the Waters statue, their favorite meeting place. The statue referred to the Gospel of St. John, and the angel carried a lily in her left hand to bless and purify New York's water. Each time Levi came to the city, he had to sneak away, traveling back and forth by bus in a single day, paying for his ticket with earnings saved from odd jobs. Today, he had told his father he had an interview at Columbia University, allowed, even though the Reverend disliked New York City and saw it as a place of crime and greed. It was Levi's first lie, and he stuttered when he told it, which made his father question him for nearly half an hour. Reverend Willard was firm in his beliefs and firmer still in his dislikes. Jet had brought along the Scarlet Letter as a gift. She had signed it to Levi with great affection. It had taken her half an hour to decide what the dedication should be. Love was too much. In friendship, too little. Affection seemed perfect. At least for now.
"That's our copy. Doesn't he have his own books?"
Franny groused.
"Not really," Jet said. "And doesn't he have any other clothes?"
Franny asked when they spied him.
"He was raised to be simple and kind."
Franny laughed.
"Are you sure you're looking for simple?"
"Simple means he's not self-indulgent.
Just so you know, Levi happens to be brilliant."
He was wearing his black suit and a scarf Jet had knitted for him. It was her first attempt and quite uneven, but Levi had pronounced it a wonder. He had dark hair and his beautiful gray-green eyes lit up whenever he saw her.
"Hey," he cried, "there's my girl." "Don't forget to be at the museum at 3:45,
Franny called when Jet took off.
"Keep track of time."
Franny watched her sister disappear into the park with Levi. It was such a beautiful, crisp day, she didn't know why she had a sinking feeling. Lewis had been following along, and now he called out with his harsh cry. He soared above the fountain, the first grand public artwork to be commissioned from a woman artist in the